All right, good morning, everybody. Good to see you here. We are exploring this whole notion of what does it mean to be us, to be tribe. If you look at the world around us, we live in sort of a post-geography world. We don't identify predominantly any longer as people with our geography, our location. We are post-geography. We identify with people outside of our geography based on values, based on interest, based on a shared story. And when we look at how we tend to relate together like that, what we find is that this is more of a tribal society that we live in. I actually love the feel of that. I love the vibe of that because it pulls us into something that is big, that is important. And as we begin to pay attention to that broader culture, it actually draws us into asking the question, like, who are we? Sometimes when we think about us as a church, we think organizationally and structure, but we live in a post-structural reality here, even in the community known as church. And so when we talk about tribe and what does it mean to be tribe, a tribe is a group of people who are held together by a common story, by a common culture, a common ethos, common values and desires, approaches to the world. And so when God has saved us, when Jesus saved us, he didn't just save us from our sin, he saved us to something. He saved us to this community, he invited us in to this community to live as tribe together. And so we're taking a few weeks, beginning last week, to explore what does it mean to be a part of this tribe? Like, what is this tribe? Who is this tribe? Who are we? Who are we becoming? And last week we talked about how we are identified as a tribe, as a worshiping community. But we looked at worship not just merely as to what happens here as we gather on a Sunday morning. We understand worship differently. As a part of this worshiping community, as part of our tribe of worshipers, we understand that our worship is when we give ourselves totally and completely in every facet of our lives, when we offer ourselves completely to him. And so our worship takes place on Sunday morning, on Monday morning, on Tuesday afternoons, on Thursday evenings. It happens throughout the entirety of our lives. That's what it means to be a community, a tribe of worshipers. And today we're looking at something a little bit different and what it means to be tribe. I was recently struck by a book that has come out. It's a book by a guy named Sebastian Junger. And he is known for his writings, and they've even made some documentaries, because what he's able to do, he has this unique capacity through his craft to draw people into and behind the curtain of combat. And so he would not only be with soldiers in the heat of combat and drawing the readers and drawing the watchers of his documentaries into that, he's describing what's happening there. And in the heat of combat, he will talk about this in some of his other books. He'll talk about what happens there amongst the brotherhood of comrades, where the hierarchy of the military no longer defines you, where you are living where there are no rules. And so he talks about that. In his latest book, he actually calls it Tribe. He's making a different reflection, not about what happens particularly on the battlefield, but what happens as our soldiers come home. As our soldiers, our combat veterans have experienced the horrific nature of war. Like, we get a sanitized version when we haven't been there, but those who have seen it have seen the horrific nature of combat and warfare. And many come back into our society, into our world, with PTSD, post-traumatic stress syndrome. And the observation that this author was making is that there is a vast difference in how people will approach the healing journey of PTSD. In this kind of review in the New York Times of the book, Matthew Crawford, the author of the review, writes this about the book Tribe. Post-traumatic stress disorder is a medical term for a cultural problem. The basic impossibility, of digesting the experience of combat as an isolated individual among other isolated individuals, each devoted to pursuing his or her private interests. There is no tribe. And Junger, as he's making observations in this book, he points out that those who come back from combat and have tribe, not just the organizations that make up our society, but they have tribe, they actually have the capacity to overcome and experience healing from their PTSD. Those who come back and experience the isolation that is so prevalent in our society actually grapple with PTSD as a lifelong wound and pain that they have to carry. He has seen a dramatic effect that tribe has on healing, on growth, and development.
And so as we look at the tribe that we are becoming and what it means to be us, one of the things that we recognize is that that is true for us too. We carry the brokenness of this world. And sometimes it's a brokenness that just comes from being a part of this world. Sin and brokenness is something that has been a part of our world since Adam and Eve rejected God's favor and rejected God's presence in their lives. And it's been passed down from generation to generation. And we live in that world here today. Some of us are carrying the pain and the brokenness of those who have sinned against us. The betrayal, the abuse. We carry the sting of how other people have played their sin out in our lives. And we carry the effect of our own sin, our own brokenness, our own participation in the brokenness of our world through sin, greed, lust, the thirst for power. So we have to grapple with the sin of our world. And so we come to the table with this brokenness at hand. But what we're invited into is not just something that's held out there someday, somewhere. When we die, we get to experience it. But we've been invited in to get a taste of the redemption, the healing, the rescuing of God in this tribe in which we belong. We are not only a worshiping tribe, we are a healing, growing, rescuing tribe. We are a tribe of transformation. That's one of the things that sets this tribe apart, those who have been marked by His grace. We are a tribe of transformation. But for a lot of us, we look at our faith and what this looks like, and we're like, it doesn't always fit. It doesn't always make sense. As I was thinking about this in kind of my own life and how I've wrestled with some of those things and continue to wrestle with some of those things, I was having a conversation with somebody that had to do with driver's training, driver's ed. Now, I realize some of you probably grew up on farms and you've been driving since you were like 2 or 3. You pull the Nook out to shift. And you've been doing that for a while. I get that. But for those of us who are like caught in the trappings of suburbia, there comes a time in a young man's life, there comes a time in a young woman's life where you get to learn how to drive. And so growing up in suburban West Michigan, that was what my life looked like. And I had been watching, I had been studying, I had been correcting my own parents as they drove. Right? Because, of course, your 14-year-old knows everything about driving. And so, I'd been watching. I'd been kind of like preparing this moment. But then the moment came for the class. And it wasn't a class in the school. It was a different thing because of the time of my birthday and all that. So I was in this class, and I was going to learn how to drive for myself. It was awesome. It was exciting. There's manhood approaching as I learn to drive, and independence awaits, and all these kinds of things, right? So, yes, I'm a little bit overdramatic, but that's kind of what's going through my head. And so I go to the class, and before they even let you get close to a car, they want to make sure you're not an idiot. So you got to do some of the written stuff first. And so they show you pictures of what it looks like to drive down the road and what a car looks like and all that. And then once you kind of prove this basic low bar of competence, then they're going to put you behind the wheel of one of these death machines. And so you, if you've done the driver's training, you know that, they don't, break the bank on cars on this stuff. You get a pretty basic sedan. Back when I was doing this, it was a great old Ford Taurus, so you see all the people, 10 and 2, driving their Ford Tauruses around. And it's the kind of car, where if you drive it off a cliff, they're just going to say, they tried. So that's what we were expecting as we went out of this parking lot. But as we approached the parking lot to get ready to do our first drive, I saw something that was vastly different. The teacher showed up, and there in the parking lot was this IROC Z28 Camaro. And, of course, I've got this conflict in my head, thinking, of course that's not it. It's like it's the car behind that one, or, it's the Sprint in the trunk of that Camaro, or something like that. But the big yellow sign on the top of the Camaro gave it away. I was going to learn to drive on an IROC Z28. This was going to be awesome. And so I'm getting excited about this. And, the teacher's like, yep, this is the car. Now, Camaros were meant to be driven a certain way. They've got a horsepower. This Camaro even had the T-tops. So I grew up in a beach town. So when you got T-tops, the T-tops are off and you're cruising the beach. And Camaros were meant to be driven a certain way. They were meant to be driven like that. That's how you drive a Camaro. But remember, I'd never done this before. So while I might have had visions in my head of how awesome I would look behind the wheel of the Camaro, this is how I ended up driving it. I mean, it was all 10-2, baby, and feather the gas and slam on the brake. Like, it was everything you'd expect when you're first time you're driving a car. It was not awesome at all. I mean, again, I could live in the fantasy of it being awesome, but there's this fear. And so while this car had horsepower, and I found that out the first time I touched the gas and squealed the tires and like, okay, go easy on the gas. And you stop about 30 yards before a stop sign because you're not sure if the brake's actually going to work for you. Like all that stuff that goes with it, I felt like a fumbling little kindergartner sitting in this amazing machine, and I had no capacity to enjoy the thrill of what it meant to be sitting in a sweet iRoxy Camaro. I was driving this awesome machine like little Grandma Grunt driving around the beach. Sometimes my faith feels like that. Like, I've got the promise of this whole thing. It's like you come into relationship with Jesus and somebody, you get the written test, and then you head out to the parking lot and say, let's take this faith for a drive. And you head out and you're like, oh, that thing is awesome. Forget Camaro, go Ferrari. And so we're told, like, this is what this is. And we're talked about its power and its peace. And, like, it just sails down the road. You hardly feel any bumps at all. And, man, when you corner, it's like this. Right? We're given all these promises about what faith is. But for a lot of us, not only at the beginning because of our fear, but we've gotten so used to 10-2 and feather the gas that we begin to recognize and feel this dissonance that we have been promised a faith that is amazing, but we drive it like little Grandma Grunt. And so when we talk about what it means to be a faith community, a tribe where there's growth, sometimes I experience this disconnect. Like, what does it mean to actually live in the fullness of life with Christ? Right? Have you ever asked yourself, like what is this really? What is it really that we're invited into? What is it that we're really given permission for? What is it that we are really equipped for? What is the promise of life with Jesus really? See, our community, our tribe is the place where we learn in that. Our tribe is the place where we grow in that. Our tribe is the place where we experience the transformation of life with Jesus. Paul talks a bit about that. In a number of places, one of the places that we're focusing our attention is in the New Testament book of Romans. If you've got your flipper Bible with you, go ahead and start flipping to the New Testament book of Romans. Look in the table of contents if you need to. That's all cool. So it's in the New Testament, and you're going to make your way to Romans chapter 12. Romans chapter 12, verse 2 is where we're going to hang out for today. If you got your Bibles, go ahead and flip theirs on your phone. Go ahead and flip there as well, because I want us to take a look at Romans chapter 12, verse 2. Because it draws us into this something. There's something other that we're captured by here in Romans 12, verse 2. So, chapter is the big numbers. 12, 2 is the little numbers. That's the verse. Romans 12, 2 says this. Do not conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. Now, this is one of those verses, too. I know I said this about last week, but I meant it then, too, and I mean it here, too. Like, if you're a circle or a highlighter, like, this is a place. Like, circle this stuff, star this thing, highlight it on your phone, whatever. Because there's, like, this is incredible here. When we understand what he's inviting us into here, all bets are off. And this is absolutely incredible. He's given us the keys to the Ferrari. He's putting us behind the wheel and said, let's take this puppy out and see what really happens. All right, so let's do that. Let's figure out what it is and where we're at. See, the language that he's using here is this language of transformation. And we all have different perspectives on what Christian growth looks like and what Christian maturity looks like. But one of the things that's important for us to recognize is that transformation is really the goal of Christian maturity, not information. Christian maturity is determined predominantly not by information, but by transformation. In other words, we sometimes will approach Christian maturity by, I got to know this stuff. I've got to gain this body of information. But what the gospel continually draws us into and points towards is that maturity, that growth, is actually about transformation of the whole self. And that's what Paul is drawing us into in this passage. See, the gospel invites us into this brand new reality, this new way of living, this brand new way of life. So he points that out for us by giving us the verses, this versus this. And so he writes, don't conform to the pattern of this world, but be transformed. Don't conform, be transformed. So he's kind of showing these two things that are odds with each other, and he's setting them up. Now, when he's talking about world here, he's not just talking about the globe that we look at and live on and can touch and feel and map out with Google. He is talking about kind of this whole era in which we live, this whole time period, this moment in which we live. And when he talks about that moment, that era, what he's talking about is this time frame where we live, where we have gotten a glimpse of the reality, the purposes, and the redemption of God through Jesus Christ. We're like, oh, that's what you've been talking about, and it's this reality that we've gotten to experience. And so in Christ, we get a taste of this new life. We get a taste of rebirth. We get a taste of this new reality. But we do not yet live in the time frame where it is fully complete. Right? There's going to be a day when everything is sealed up, buttoned up, and done. And we don't live in that time frame either. And so we live in this era. We live in this moment where we are at odds. We live in a world that is marked predominantly by sin and brokenness. And yet we are people, through grace and through the work of Christ alive in us, we are people who have been invited to taste and live in the realities of God, something other than what this world offers. And so it creates in us a tension, doesn't it? It creates in us this tension, like what is most real? And the predominance of the tension that we experience is this battle that we do between living by the principles of this world where we reside while trying to embrace the principles and the life of this new world that we can taste but yet don't fully reside there. And so it creates this tension in us. It creates this tension in me that we've got to grapple with. And so he says, don't conform any longer to the patterns of this world. And so when we think about the patterns of this world, these are the things that drive our values. So don't value the things of this world like you once did. It's the things that we pursue and the desires of our heart. Like when we're born into this world, we're oriented to this world. We talk this world's language. We pursue this world's values. We have this world's desires. Those things are true. They're a natural part of our life. But when we come alive to Christ through faith and his grace and his spirit alive in us, something different happens. And so he's saying, don't conform any longer to the patterns of this world, but be transformed. But be transformed. Don't conform, but be transformed. Now, transformation carries with it some great connotations, and we can figure that out. We've seen the movie Transformers. It was a beetle, and now it's a warrior. We got that, right? We think about transformation. But there's actually a specific word that Paul is using here that ought to draw our attention back, because the word is only used a few times in Scripture. And one of those times that it's used takes us actually back to the gospel story of Jesus. Now, you may or may not even be familiar with some of the aspects of Jesus' life and how he lived out his life. But there's a moment in the life of Jesus that the writers of the Bible tell us about when he went away from his disciples and he took just a couple of them with him and he went up on this mountain. We've come to know the story as the transfiguration of Jesus. Jesus goes up on this mountain and his intention is to meet with his Father, like to meet with God. And what happens up on that mountain is absolutely amazing. And the gospel writers tell us that Jesus was transfigured right before their eyes. In other words, like they knew he was awesome and they had seen him do awesome stuff, but there was something about him that in the presence of the Father just transformed. Like he looked different. He was still Jesus and they could recognize him as Jesus, but he was just different in the presence of the Father. And so that is Jesus' transfiguration. It's the same word that Paul is using here. We get that same concept, not only at that Mount of Transfiguration, but in Jesus post-resurrection. So Jesus dies on the cross. He comes back from the dead, right? That's a big piece of the story. And did you notice that after he's resurrected, the people don't always recognize him? Like he was there in the garden where the tomb was, and the people that knew him best approached him, and they didn't even recognize him. Like Mary didn't even recognize him until he said her name. Because there was something about him that was different. He was in that transfigured place. He was in that place where he was more kingdom of heaven than he was kingdom of the earth. He was more a resident of heaven than he was a resident of this world. And so the post-resurrected Jesus shows us something, not just about him, but get this, something about us as well. Because the promise that we have been given is that the resurrection was not just for Jesus. Oh, he was the first. He was the first. But that promise of the resurrection is for us as well. And so it leads us into this place where we understand that, this isn't all there is. And every time I think about like new heaven, new earth, new body, I let out a little bit of a whoop whoop. Like, great. There's going to be a point where we are no longer bound by the frailties of our own humanity. But rather, the fullness of who we are will be a reflection of the glory of God. That's what it means to experience the power and the glory of the resurrection. A promise not only for Jesus the Messiah, but a promise to those who would say yes to him and be his followers and be his people. So we look at this. We say, man, Jesus up on the mountain of transfiguration, that was amazing. I wish I could have been there. It was so cool that Peter and John wanted to stay there. Like, their bright idea and the thing was Jesus. Like, this is even better. Let's not leave. We'll do the hard work. We'll build the tent for you. We got one for you. We got one for Moses because he was hanging out with Moses and Elijah. So, like, they were all huddling up together. They're like, we'll build the stuff. Let's just stay here because I can't believe what I'm seeing. It's amazing. Like, that's how amazing Jesus was in that moment. And post-resurrection with Jesus, like, people saw him and like, oh, this is amazing. This is amazing. They were captured by that. And so they knew who he was and they knew the promise. But that promise seems so far away. When our feet are anchored to planet Earth, the promise of a new life, the promise of a new reality seems so far away, doesn't it? And that's what Paul was speaking to in this moment. He was speaking to people, offering them courage, offering them hope, and pointing them back to the reality of the promise that Jesus had given. Jesus had promised his followers renewal in the resurrection. And he was reminding his followers, this is not something just for a day that comes in the future when you leave this earth. It's something you can taste. It's something that can be your reality even now. Don't be conformed to the patterns of this world, but be transformed. And those who heard that word knew that the picture of transformation was the risen Christ himself. That they, with the work of God alive in them, would experience the glory of God and his richness alive in them, and they too would be changed in him. And so he says once again, don't conform any longer to the patterns of this world, but be transformed. He's drawing us into this new way of living. That there's a whole set of values, there's a whole culture that is different and distinct than what you were raised with, that is different and distinct with what you find most natural. There is another way of life. And so he's saying, as you embrace that life, as you embrace that reality, it becomes increasingly alive in you. Sometimes I think that growth and maturity is simply about the information that I take in. And I miss the beauty and the power of the transformation that's offered. The gospel is an invitation to a tribal community of transformation where we experience the fullness of Christ coming alive in us. And sometimes, like that little kid trying to learn how to drive, I'm like, I don't know how I can do this. And the voice of the Spirit says, exactly, you can't. As long as we try to control it, as long as we try to muscle it, as long as we try to fabricate our own transformation, it will elude us. It will elude us beyond our grasp and our own ability. See, this kind of transformation isn't something that takes place simply because I try harder. This kind of transformation is the thing that takes place when I embrace the Spirit of God alive in me. When I open myself up to him and say, you are the one who is shaping my character. You are the one who is shaping my values. You are the one who is shaping who I am becoming. And the context that he has given us for doing that is community. Think about this for a moment. The benchmark that's laid out for us on what it means to be his people is love. Like, it's all summarized in the call, the invitation to love God with everything we have and to love those around us in crazy radical ways. Love can't be fabricated, can it? It just can't. Like, have you ever tried to muscle up love? Like, oh, I'm going to try really hard to love this person, right? So, like that. Like, the best you can do is not kill the person. But you can't muster up love like that. Love is something that is birthed in us through the Spirit of love alive in us. And so with that as our marker of what's most real, the invitation of the gospel is come be a part of this community. And so this community plays a role in shaping that, because it's in this context of tribe that we learn how to love. It's in the context of this tribe that we remind each other who he is and what he has done. Because we forget sometimes. We get about our week. It usually takes me till about Tuesday before I forget what God does. And being in this tribe, I'm reminded, like, God's amazing. Look what he's done. Oh, God provided this. And so as we share this story together as tribe, we're reminded about who he is. We're reminded about his character, that he is powerful, that he is good, that he is loving, that he is kind, that he is holy. We remind each other in this tribe of who he is. And it draws in us a, oh, yes. And we reorient ourselves towards him, and it births this love towards him. It also shapes in us love for each other. Wouldn't being a Christian be so much easier if there were no other people involved? Like, this would be amazing. Like, we come to Jesus, go on a desert island, just hang out there till Jesus comes back, or we go meet him and call it a day. It would be so. It is so much easier to live out our Christian faith on a sheet of paper where we write out our doctrine. It is horrifically hard to live out our Christian faith in the company of other fallible people. And yet that's what he draws us into. That's what he draws us into. Because it's in this community, in this tribe, that we learn what it is to forgive. But they hurt me. Exactly. You are no more like Jesus than when you forgive those who have betrayed you. You are no more like Jesus than when you release your capacity for revenge against those who count themselves your enemy. And so it is in this tribe that we learn to be like him. And the entrance into this tribe is not what we might think. Sometimes we think our entrance into the tribe is our own perfection. Like we've cleaned it up. We've got it buttoned up. And so we say things like, or we have people that we love who say things like, when I get things figured out, when I get things cleaned up, then I will. Right? We've had those conversations. That's not the entrance into this tribe. The entrance of this tribe is our own brokenness and sin. The entrance to this tribe is when we come with empty pockets and say, honestly, I got nothing. Because in and of ourselves, we got nothing. Like, the thing that we share in common with each other is that we have to grapple with our own sin and our own brokenness. Now, my sin might look different than yours. And let's face it, my sin is much more palatable than yours. Right? Right? You look around you and you do that too. You're like, I'm used to my sin. And I can hide my sin. That person's sin is right out there for everybody to see. My sin, I at least have the courtesy to keep it covered up. The entrance into this tribe, this transformational tribe, the entrance fee for that is our own brokenness and truth about our poverty when it comes to spiritual things. That my pockets are empty and my soul is wrecked. When we're honest about our sin. Now, here's what's different. Sometimes what happens is we'll do a couple things. When kind of confronted with the brokenness of this world, we'll do a couple things. One of the things that we might do is we go on this side of the spectrum and we say, take your sin and keep it over there. Like, I've got stuff buttoned up. I've been cleaned up. God's got me. I'm a part of this thing. You go over there because I don't want to get any on me. Right? So sometimes we do that and we wrestle with that and what that looks like. Right? And then other times what we do is we come over here, we look at that, and we're like, well, that doesn't seem cool. So I'm going to come over on this side of the thing. And so we go over on this side of the thing, and we say, hey, brokenness and sin is welcome. But what we do is we like uphold brokenness and sin. We celebrate brokenness and sin. That's not actually the invitation of the gospel either. And here's where we find the Jesus way. Here's where we find this place where the gospel invites us into. A transformational tribe that is empowered by the gospel, that is empowered by Christ alive in us. This transformational tribe begins with welcoming brokenness, begins with welcoming weakness, begins with welcoming sin. But we don't celebrate brokenness, we celebrate redemption. Isn't that what Jesus did over and over and over again? Jesus drew up close to the broken. Jesus drew up close to the sinful. He moved towards them. It wasn't even that he just sat back and said, if you want to, you may approach the throne. He moved towards them, but he didn't leave them there. The invitation of the gospel is to welcome brokenness and sin while celebrating and moving towards the redemption, the healing, and the salvation of God. And so a tribe that is transformational in its nature, where we learn, where we grow, where we become more like Christ alive in us, is this community that welcomes brokenness and celebrates redemption. And we remind each other of those things. As we welcome the brokenness, we have to grapple with our own brokenness. Because sometimes your sin makes me really uncomfortable. Sometimes your brokenness makes me feel a little like, right? And sometimes my sin makes you feel a little bit heebie-jeebie, right? And so, but what... that actually says more about me than it does you in that moment. And so I've got to confront my own sin in the midst of the sin and the brokenness of the community. And then together in community, we remind ourselves not only who he is, we remind each other that we are his children. And as his children, as his people, as his tribe, there is a new reality that he draws us into. And this new reality is this transformational life. Don't conform any longer to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Don't conform, but instead transform. And so we get to be this tribal community that calls that transformation out, that comes back to this place of, yes, you're safe here. You're welcome here. We've all got empty pockets apart from the grace and power and transformation of Christ alive in us. And so we are people whose growth, whose transformation is not of our own doing. Don't we sometimes need that reminder? Like, I've been walking with Jesus for about 30-plus years now. Some of you have been walking with him a lot longer than I do. Like, the longer we walk with Jesus, the more sometimes I need to be reminded that my own growth, that my own transformation isn't my own doing. Oh, those are hard moments. Because I like to think I got it going on. Like, I like to think that I got this thing licked. I like to think that this is working. And then he holds up the mirror, and in his grace and compassion and conviction, he draws me back to the place where I come to him, where I come to you with empty pockets and say, I got nothing. And Jesus says, you're right, but I have given you everything. I have given you everything. I am the one, Jesus says, that gives you life. I am the one that draws you out of the bondage of this world. And gives you a taste, even here, even now, gives you a taste of the beauty of the glory of God that is to come. Jesus is already there. I think as he's speaking to us through his spirit, he's like, you're going to like it. Like, new heaven, new earth is going to rock. You are going to love this thing. And you, perfectly reflecting the glory of God, it's beautiful. And I know we've got to grapple with our own sin, don't we? We still are living in the limitations of this mortal shell of a body. This frame of mind that has been shaped more by this world than the kingdom of heaven. But the Spirit of God beckons us through the power of Scripture and the beauty of transformational tribe that says, don't conform any longer to the patterns of this world, but be transformed. And I like where this brings us here. Be transformed by the renewing of your mind, and then you will know what the will of God is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. Oh, wouldn't it be amazing to like always know what God wanted you to do? We wrestle with this. We pine for this, don't we? God, just tell me what you want me to do. Like, we wake up and we're holy and we're righteous and we're good Christians, and we say, Jesus, I only want to do what you want to do, and we don't hear him say it. And the reason that I don't hear him say it is that very moment I find that I'm straddling two worlds. What I'm actually asking him is, God, I want to get to your end result by my means. Show me how to do it. Right? So we say, God, show me peace. I want to get to peace. Show me how by my own effort and might I can get to peace. God, I want joy. And so, God, show me how by my own effort and might and strength I can get to joy. And what he says is, you can't get there from here. There is no road. There is no road that you can walk in your own strength, in your own ability, in your own capacity. There is no road you can journey that gets you there. He says, I'm the one who gets you there. And so we wrestle with this will of God, and God, what do you want me to do? Because we want to get to his ends by our means. And so we're reminded, don't conform to the patterns of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. When you embrace the kingdom principles, when you embrace kingdom priorities, then you will know the way. And he is the way. You know, this weekend marks something significant for us as a nation. It's actually something that, for too many of us, it's easy to gloss over. We might recognize that our kids don't have school. There's extra kids on the street on Monday. But we don't necessarily even stop and recall what's going on here. Well, it's a celebration in our nation. It's a remembrance of our nation, of the life of a man. And it really isn't even about the man, Martin Luther King Jr. But it's about what he did and what he represented. See, he gave voice to something decades ago. He gave voice to something. He gave voice to a new way to pursue justice. See, everything that the world has told us to do for centuries has been, if you want justice, gain power. And gain power by any might necessary. And once you have power, there you have justice. But Martin Luther King Jr. saw something different. He saw something different. He saw a different way. And he gave voice to that different way. That said, the pathway to peace is not through violence. You can't get there from here. The pathway to unity is not through division. You can't get there from here. He saw something different, and he became a voice of something other. And while most of us aren't going to lead movements and get monuments, we each have that same choice. We have that choice by the grace of Christ alive in us to choose the other. When you encounter somebody who has betrayed you and you want peace, you can't get there through revenge. When you're feeling alone and isolated and you want joy, selling yourself out won't get you there. When we look and have been captured by the beauty of the kingdom of heaven, even as it has touched down on earth, we cannot get there on our own might and in our own strength. But the one who gets us there has made himself readily available to us. For he said, I am the way. I am the truth. I am the life. Do you want to know what life with the Father is? Come to me. Come to me and I will show you. And even here, even now, we can taste it. When you forgive those who have hurt you, you taste the kingdom of heaven. When you give out of generosity and a spirit of abundance and push away the fear of scarcity, you taste the kingdom of heaven. When you reconcile division, you taste the kingdom of heaven. No, there may not be a monument built in your honor. But there's a testimony in heaven that is written with your name on it. It is a reminder that we are a tribe. We are here together, and this entrance to this tribe is our own empty pockets. When we come and say, all I have to offer is my brokenness. And the leader of this tribe says, exactly. You've got nothing, but I will give you everything. And together, as people who are marked by his grace, we live in the good news of his transformation. The people who pass by this street, they pass by us every week, every day. And they look at this community and they say, I don't belong there. Those are people who've got it all buttoned up. They've got it figured out. Like, if only they knew, right? Like we can be honest with this. But we got a world who's looking for something. Something real. Something different. And our posture as tribe is not merely to be able to experience that here together, but our posture as tribe is to say, you come. And they say, but all I've got is my brokenness. Like, I don't, like, exactly. That's what we brought here too. We got nothing. You belong. You belong here. If you are within the sound of my voice and all you can bring is your brokenness, hear these words. You belong. You belong. Welcome home. Because when we find our way home, into the presence of our God, He changes us. And so we are a tribe. We are a tribe of people who are marked by His grace, who are changed by His love, and empowered by His Spirit alive in us. Don't conform any longer to the patterns of this world. You can't get there from here. But be transformed by the renewing of your mind, and then you will know the will of God, His good, pleasing, and perfect will. Let me pray. Father, we are people who are wrecked by our own brokenness. We have been ravaged by your grace. We submit ourselves to you in humility and say, God, change us. Don't just change me, change us. And let us find what it is to be a tribe of people who are experiencing the transformation of your Spirit. Let us walk in encouragement with each other. Let us boldly go into places of grace, welcoming brokenness and moving towards and celebrating your redemption and healing and wholeness. Jesus, we need you more than anything else. We offer you ourselves in Jesus' name. Amen.